Luke's Gospel to Christ's triumphal entry into Jerusalem, the famous story of the man on the donkey. And it's important to see this episode in its true context and the background against which the Gospel writers set it. I'm sure that you're familiar with the popular idea that originally we had the four Gospels with their simple stories about the life of Jesus, and then along came the New Testament epistles with a rather complicated theology. First, the simple Gospels, and then the difficult epistles. And that is the popular notion. And that idea has sometimes led to the driving of a wedge between the Jesus of history, the simple man in the Gospels, and the Christ of theology, the complicated Christ of the epistles. Albert Schweitzer, the missionary, was interested in that and wrote a book about it called The Quest for the Historical Jesus. And Schweitzer claimed to be scraping away the difficult, complicated theology which had been laid on the simple person of Jesus. And Schweitzer tried to find underneath the theology the historical Jesus of the Gospels. First the Gospels with a simple Jesus, and then the epistles with a complicated Christ. But in fact, all that is nonsense. Many of the New Testament epistles were written before the Gospels. And the early Christians in the early church had to deal with the hard things first. And it was only after they had come to grips with the theology of Christ that they came to read the simple stories in the Gospels. And the man on the donkey this morning illustrates this very point. This is not a children's story. It is a theological statement about Christ, about who Christ is and what Christ has come to do. The man on the donkey is the Jesus of history, but he is also the Christ of theology. The Jesus on the donkey is the Christ, and the whole incident has to do with his lordship and his kingship. You see, it is the whole purpose of the four Gospel writers not simply to tell simple stories about Jesus. It is their purpose to show the lordship and the kingship of Christ. And the miracles and the mighty works of God, which you find recorded in the Gospels, are there not to portray Jesus as a kind of magician or a wonder worker, but to tell out and to proclaim his lordship and his sovereignty and his kingship. Jesus commanded loaves and fishes to be multiplied, and he fed 5,000. That is Christ, the Lord of nature. Jesus commanded 120 gallons of dirty washing water, and he turned it to wine. That is again Christ, the Lord of nature. Jesus commanded the stormy waves to be quiet, or as the Greek says, to be muzzled. What manner of man is this, that even the winds and the waves obey him? Ask the disciples. That is Christ again, the Lord of nature. Lepers came to Jesus, those lonely outcasts and rejects of humanity, forlorn creatures, alienated and estranged from God and man. And Jesus touched their vile bodies, and his word pronounced them clean, and his touch brought fellowship and warmth and love into their lives. That is Christ, the Lord of uncleanness. On three recorded occasions, Jesus spoke to corpses, to the widow of Nain's son, to Jairus' daughter, to Lazarus. Jesus addressed death, and death obeyed him and yielded up its prisoners. That is Christ, the Lord of the grave. Men and women used to come to Jesus, demented and tormented by evil spirits, their lives torn apart by demonic powers. And Jesus commanded the spirits and bade them depart. Art thou come to destroy us before the time? They asked. That is Christ, the Lord of hell. Lord of nature, Lord of sin, Lord of uncleanness, Lord of the grave, Lord of hell. Jesus Christ is Lord of all. And that is the true background to the man on the donkey. Here is Jesus, the Christ, riding in triumph, Lord of all, into the holy city. But there is this difference. In all these instances, raising the dead, cleansing the lepers, forgiving sins, casting out demons, the lordship of Christ is obvious. Anybody can see that Christ is in control of the situation. But it is not obvious that a man on a donkey is Lord of all. The lordship of Christ is a veiled lordship. Christ is the king, but his kingdom is hidden. I was at a Crieff ministers' conference last Monday, Harry Millier of St. Luke's Church in Paisley spoke to us of Islam and of the determination of Islam to win Europe for Allah. And he told us of what Christians have in common with Islam. Did you know, for example, that Mohammedans acknowledge Jesus as a great prophet sent from God? Did you know that Mohammedans believed in the virgin birth of Christ, of Mary? Did you know that Mohammedans believed that Jesus has been ascended to heaven and that he is coming again on the day of judgment? But Mohammedans do not accept that Jesus rode into the holy city on a donkey. Allah, they say, would never humiliate one of his prophets in that way, to set him on a beast of burden. The lordship of Christ, the lordship of the Son of Man, is a veiled lordship. The man on the donkey is the Lord of all, but his lordship is hidden. Second thing is this: the man on the donkey is really the fourth in a series. Let me give you the three others. I recall touching on this a few years ago at an Easter season. You know that in the Old Testament there are three great figures, and they stand out and stand up in the Old Testament like great mountain peaks. The first is the man on the horse. And he is the Messiah, the Christ, longed for by the Jews. And the Messiah, the man on the horse, was thought of as rather a military figure, heroic, the son of David, triumphalistic, riding forth, conquering and to conquer on a horse. And the Messiah was on a horse, because the horse in that world was not simply an animal. It was an emblem of worldly power and prestige. It was like owning a Rolls Royce or a Cadillac, or I suppose the modern equivalent might be a satellite disc, a status symbol. You see, originally, horses were not known in Palestine because the hilly terrain was unsuitable for them. You get horses in flat country. Egypt is flat. Babylon is flat. And when the Egyptians and the Babylonians arrived with their horses and chariots in Palestine, the Hebrews were terrified, as equatorial pygmies might be if you drove a 40-ton Stalin tank into their villages. The man on horse is the Messiah. You find him in Isaiah 63, "Who is this that cometh from Edom?" A man on a horse, riding back from victory with his garments stained with blood. Isaiah 63, you find him in Psalm 45. gird your sword upon your thigh, O mighty one, in your glory and majesty. In your majesty, ride forth victoriously for the cause of truth and to defend the right. Let your right hand teach you dread deeds. Your arrows are sharp in the heart of the king's enemies, and the peoples fall under you. And that is one picture of the coming Christ. And it is an authentic picture of Christ. The man on the horse is the champion of his people. He fights for his people. If God be for us, says Paul, who can be against us? And the man on the horse is God for us. There's a second figure in the Old Testament, and it is the man on the clouds. And you find him in Daniel 7, and his name in Daniel 7 is the Son of Man. But he's not a human Son of Man. He is a heavenly Son of Man. And in Daniel 7, this man receives a kingdom, authority, and power from the Ancient of Days. And all authority and kingdom and power are entrusted to him in heaven and on earth. And the man on the clouds is shown us in Daniel as the Lord of history and the judge of the universe, before whom everyone must stand and every eye shall see him. Listen to these words. And I, Daniel, saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one like the Son of Man. He came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him, and to him was given dominion, glory, and kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom is one which shall not be destroyed. The man on the clouds of heaven, and that too is an authentic picture of Christ. Christ the judge. There is a third figure in the Old Testament, and it is the man on the cross. And he is the most enigmatic and at once the most magnetic figure of all, and comes from Isaiah 53. He's not the victorious Messiah, the man on the horse. He's not the coming judge, the man on the clouds. He's the man on the cross. And he is the sin-bearing Christ. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. The chastisement of our peace was laid on him, and by his stripes we are healed. It has pleased the Lord to bruise him. All our iniquities were laid on him. He bore the penalty, he paid the price The man on the cross is the sin bearer. But if the man on the horse is your champion, and if the man on the clouds is your judge, and if the man on the cross is your sin bearer, who is the man on the donkey? They say that if you dig deep enough into the past, you will always find something surprising in history. I have been rereading Professor Carter's great book on the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. And Carter speaks of how they came across the mummy of the 18-year-old boy. Now they peeled away the layers of bandages, saturated in gum, perfumes, spices. Past the lucky charms and the amulets to keep away the evil spirits. Past the withered heaps of lotus blossoms that the mourning women had heaped on the 18-year-old king. And what did they find? Enough to suggest that Tutankhamun had been murdered. Well, if you dig back, what do you find? Who is the man on the donkey? If you go far back enough into Old Testament history, you will find that the donkey, and not the horse, was the royal beast. When David the king was at his best, long before he was corrupted by money and affluence and power, David the king rode on a donkey, on the royal mule, and not on a horse. Do you know the great story of the rebellion of Adonijah? You find it in 1 Kings 1. Adonijah was David's son. His mother was Haggith, a lady from David's extensive harem. Haggith was unsympathetic towards her husband, to say the least. And Adonijah, her son, decided to bring about a coup d'etat, steal the kingdom from his father. And so, crazy boy, he gathered horses and chariots and threw a feast, called the men of Israel, and proclaimed himself king. But Nathan the prophet got to hear of this, and Zadok the priest. So Nathan told Bathsheba, and Bathsheba told David that Adonijah had tried to seize the kingdom. What happened? Very strategic. They went to the stables and took out the royal donkey. And they set Solomon on the donkey, paraded him before the people, and Solomon was anointed king. It is the basis for Handel's great coronation anthem. Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anointed Solomon king, but the donkey was there. The man who rides on the donkey is the king. Solomon lost that vision. No sooner had he become king than he bought 40,000 horses and stabled them at Megiddo. 300 years later, Zechariah the prophet recaptured the vision in Zechariah 9:9. You know the words. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee, meek and lowly, riding on an ass, a mule, a donkey, the royal beast. The man who rides on the donkey is the king. Let me make this personal. We know three things about that beast. First of all, he was unbridled and untamed. The gospel writers tell us that no man had ever sat on him. He'd never been broken. And there is that in all of us. There is a wild, unbroken, unbridled, unyielded, proud bit in all of us. There's a bit of the donkey in all of us. And only Christ can tame you. Secondly, it was the donkey's destiny to become a Christ bearer. A Christopher, that's the meaning of the word Christopher, a Christ bearer. Have you ever considered that it might be your destiny to be a bearer of Christ in the world? And thirdly, because of one and because of two, God dearly wants you to become a donkey for Christ's sake. The New Testament says that Christians are called to be fools for Christ's sake. And that is part of the authentic call of the gospel. God calls you to be a Christ-bearing fool. Of course, it's not easy to be a fool. It can be painful being a fool for Christ's sake. Donkeys do tend to get beaten, don't they, and kicked around. And of course, a donkey is not an ornamental creature. You don't keep donkeys in stables. Christians are not supposed to be ornamental creatures. A donkey is a burden bearer. A donkey is a worker. And it's the donkey who has the last laugh. And you know what they say about the last laugh, that he who laughs last laughs longest. Only those who are prepared to become Christ bearers in the world And only those who are prepared to knuckle down under the kingship of Christ as the donkey did will laugh longest with God in eternity. Amen. May God add his blessing to the preaching of his word. To his name be honor and praise. Hymn number 423, a hymn about the kingship of Christ. 423 in closing.